Hello everyone, welcome to the NRF1 podcast. Belated apologies, we are slightly behind the times in terms of the Hungarian Grand Prix. My name is Michael Bailey and I have now watched the Hungarian Grand Prix, so I can now comment on it. And I have with me Kyle Cumbers and Richard Baxter to talk about all those fun and games. Kyle, are you well?
I'm very well, thank you. How about yourself?
Yes, not bad at all. Thank you very much. I'm enjoying the summer greyness, though we have had some nice weather. Richard, yourself?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you.
Looking good there in your t-shirt. I always seem to comment on your clothing, but I don't know why, but it's a nice t-shirt.
It's got rolled sleeves which are stitched, rolled up, so I mean, apparently they make your arms look bigger. And anyone who knows me will know, I'm a really thin guy, so...
Oh my god,
I do what I do.
I am glad I asked. Now I've got to be honest, now I will tweet a picture of your t-shirt, only this time I'll remember because I make these promises and then I forget, but I will actually do that this time, and people can enjoy the t-shirt much like we're enjoying this evening. Anyway, Hungarian Grand Prix, what a race to end the and let's be honest here, superb, I think, first half of the 2015 season. Am I right?
Absolutely. F1 needed it because didn't totally agree, but there seemed to be within the F1 world a lot of negativity towards the first half of the season. It wasn't the best, but it certainly wasn't the worst. And it's good. We've now gone to summer break and we haven't got all this nonsense about how F1 is completely broken and the sport is rubbish. I mean, there is things they can improve in F1, but yeah, it was a fantastic race.
Yeah, it was a good race. Race before that was good as well. And it seems we're kind of taking a bit of a turn recently. As Carl says, it's not been so negative at all. And it's in some ways quite similar to last year with Mercedes, kind of leading the way, but with another team also picking up a few victories. But it also seems to be much closer towards the front, you know, with Williams and Force India behind him as well. So it's been good.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe because we're Formula One fans, we enjoy it when there is a lot going on, even if it's not necessarily happening at the front, I suppose, because you look at it, you know, Lewis Hamilton's been pretty dominant really, but there's been enough other stuff going on with Ferrari, Williams, Red Bull, and maybe siphoning off all the, you know, slagging off of the sport to keep us all interested.
It's always going to have them races when somebody leaves from the front, because how the format is, you qualify, the quickest bloke's on the front and off he goes. So sometimes that is going to happen, and in any sport you're not going to get, you pick 20 football matches, not everyone's going to be a classic, so sometimes you're going to get decent races, sometimes you're going to get fantastic races.
That's a good analogy, because you think back to the Arsenal Invincibles they had in whatever year it was, I don't know, but you know, but people say that Premier League season was boring just because you had one team unbeaten. I'm pretty sure there was other brilliant matches involved, so it's you know, can draw similarities to that kind of thing as well.
And that achievement goes down as one of the greats in English football. So boom, boom. Sebastian Vettel won around the Hungara Ring, or the camel on the skateboard, stroke surfboard. Yeah, you all love that now, don't you? Yeah. And it was a very Sebastian Vettel-esque win, wasn't it? Leading from the front, brilliant the way he dealt with the first lap. Again, you know, but the second row seems to be the place to start a Grand Prix at the moment. Sebastian Vettel is now equal third, as I'm sure you know, on the all-time winners list, equal with Ayrton Senna, or Ayrton Senna, if you prefer. Alain Prost and Michael Schumacher are the only two ahead of him now. Michael Schumacher was the last Ferrari winner at the Hungara Ring as well. And there was quite a bit of support, I think, for Ferrari there. Classic Seb, and... I struggle to know what to make of Sebastian Vettel sometimes, but you know, in that position, that kind of race, he's unstoppable, really.
Yeah, he seems to. I don't know. There was always suggestions that he couldn't race in his dominant Red Bull years, which I think was pretty rubbish in the end. But he seems to, like I say, when he gets ahead, it's just he's got the calmness and cool, calm and collected, probably the term. And he seems to get quicker and quicker when he's in the front. And as we said a minute ago, we sort of said it was a classic race, but in reality, he led from lap one until the end, didn't he?
Mm.
So,
yeah. Classic. And Lewis Hamilton didn't lead a lap of the race, so that's his record run broken.
Yeah, it's quite impressive how long that went on for. But, you know, on the subject of Vettel as well, it's quite impressive because there was a lot that happened over the weekend. And obviously I think drivers reacted in different ways, and Spinosi clearly came out on top, and he pulled something out of the bag. And also after, I think it was just Ferrari in general, because Raikkonen was looking good.
Yeah.
But unfortunately the car decided to not work anymore. So
you just never would want to be Sebastian Vettel's teammate, would you? Because it seems to just engender a huge amount of bad luck. With Mercedes, did they blow it? Was it their fault?
It seems they have a problem with the starts now. Let's see, it was before two races in a row where they've both been on the front row and both ended up third and fourth into the first corner. So they've got a problem there. Hamilton had a strange first few corners, which sometimes his aggressive nature comes off, sometimes it doesn't. I was disappointed in Rosberg because they just... Obviously, we couldn't really see Hamilton's pace because he's in that traffic all the time. but Rosberg ended up a long way behind Vettel before the safety car.
And he botched his tyre choice, didn't he, on his pit stop as well?
I thought it was a bit of a strange comment, really, because he was so worried about Hamilton. It was like, oh, what's Hamilton doing? Oh, he's got the hard tyre. There was no sort of thought about, oh, maybe we could even get second. It was just worrying about what's coming from behind, and that seems... Yeah, overall seemed a bit strange strategy decisions.
I mean, so effectively Rosberg couldn't salvage the situation he was in after he was a bit unfortunate with the puncture that he got. I can't remember who he picked it up off now.
Ricardo,
who was also in the wars, it must be said. So, whereas Lewis Hamilton, you know, he had a difficult time of it, but he did salvage a pretty good finish. Was he sixth in the end? Yeah, so he finished good, a pretty decent finishing position. And while you could possibly, some will and have criticised him for maybe his focus and he's doing all these weird and wacky things away from the track, he pulled out of the bag in qualifying and he was giving fist pumps at finishing, at taking pole position, which, you know, sort of underlined his focus.
I did hear something on the subject of Mercedes. I think Toto Wolff said they were looking at the starts for Belgium. And he said they were looking too far ahead in for the future. They've learned to just, you know, look at what you got to do this weekend, which is obviously the obvious, you would have thought, especially for a big team like that.
One race at a time.
But it was impressive how Hamilton did get points and he's extended his championship lead, if not a bit lucky, really, it has to be said. But he was quite critical of himself as well. He said he was all over the place. And it's like, well, there was a few mistakes, but you know it's racing. But at the end of the day, I don't think any driver, maybe apart from Vettel, had an absolutely clean race, did they?
No, and it's the first time he's probably been in the field for a while, to be honest. Most of the time he's been out in front and having to deal with it. But he was critical of himself, and I think at one point he was on the radio saying, oh, I'm sorry guys, I've mucked this all up. And then he went and banged out the fastest lap for the race. So I think in some ways those are the races that maybe will define his season, because it didn't go very well, and as you said, he extended his championship league, so he can't really maybe ask for too much more. We do have to touch on this because it happened after we recorded the last podcast, as we mentioned, or as I mentioned just before it went out. Jules Bianchi, obviously he lost his life and his fight for life in hospital before the race in Hungary. It's been a very tough time, I think, for everyone in Formula One. Some lovely tributes during the whole weekend, I thought, and maybe summed up best by Sebastian Vettel's words, having brought the car home, just won his race, and dedicating it to Jules and all that sort of stuff. I mean, a lot you could tell the popularity of Jules, and clearly his presence was felt around that entire weekend.
Yeah, you could definitely see the, about how closely it brought the grid, and maybe how close from the outside we didn't realise how close they are, because it must affect him. You know, he's one of those, and maybe it's been such a long time since passing away at a race weekend that you get complacent. It definitely showed us that motorsport is still very dangerous. And hopefully we can learn from it.
Exactly. And it's hard, I suppose, because Jules was in hospital for such a long period of time. I mean, Japan and Suzuka feels like such a long time ago. And maybe some of the lessons have been learnt. I mean, is there much more that can be done? I suppose the obvious one is looking at closed cockpits and that maybe coming in future. But, you know, these drivers, they do know the risks, and they do what they love to do. It's the same issue, I suppose, with Lewis Kerr, who's recovering from a speedway accident at the moment.
Well, there was a lot that happened that weekend. I mean, for the very first practice session, after hearing that news, Perez goes out, his car breaks and it flips over. And in some ways you're like, oh no, not again, yes, just the same weekend that you've heard the bad news. But at the same time you think, wow, he's just flipped that, he's got out. It also, you know, credit to how safe the cars are. But you know, they had that really nice bit at the start of the race where they had all the helmets put down and Jules' helmet in the middle, and that was really nice, and all the drivers were together. But I think that just affected them all so much, because I mean, judging from the race, Ricardo, that seemed to make him go really aggressive, go all out attack, you know, for one of his best mates. I mean, Hamilton, it seemed too upset in some ways because he didn't seem concentrated on the race enough. Rosberg, you could say similar. I mean, Massa, I know you spent a long time speaking with the family afterwards and, I don't know, hugging them and all sorts, I guess. But there was a lot that happened there, and I think some drivers just kind of reacted differently towards the race, which also spiced it up.
It did, yeah. They wanted to put on a show, definitely, for Jules, and I think probably it's quite clear the impact that Jules had on the grid, and I think that will be a lasting one too. Okay, let's have the NRF1 pit stops. See, my impression isn't quite as good as Mr. Dave Tillier's. Let's start with Williams, shall we? We were having a quick discussion before we went on air, if you like, trying to work out what happened to Felipe Massa, because he just completely disappeared. He put his car slightly too far ahead, I think, on the grid, so they had to line up again, and he then had a 5-second, was it, penalty? It was certainly a penalty in the pit stop, and that scuffed his race, and he disappeared. And Valtteri Bottas, what happened to him, Kyle?
He, with the whole Hamilton after safety car restart, was when he was off track and Kvyat overtook him off track, which ended up with a penalty for Kvyat, understandably. And then Bottas, I think, was trying to take advantage of the whole situation and then cut across Mr. Verstappen and ended up with a puncture. It was just, they weren't particularly quick over Williams, so.
Which you had, we'll get onto the predictions, yeah. But you had said quite a high downforce track, isn't it, Hungary, yeah, and they don't really have that so much.
No, they struggled at Monaco. Not Monaco is awful, and they were out in Q1, weren't they? One of them was. So I think they qualified both in the top 10, but so I think they slightly improved, and I think they mentioned it at the weekend that they're hoping to be quicker than they were in Monaco. Mm. But like I said, they sort of just disappeared, really, and like I said, even after the massive penalty, I don't really know what happened to him during the race.
Couldn't be bothered. No, I'm sure it wasn't that. We should touch on Valtteri Bottas, because the speculation linking him to Ferrari reached fever pitch, I think, fair to say, going into the weekend, and he's tried to play that down, and it doesn't quite seem in his mind to be the done deal that some people would like to paint a picture of.
Well, I think you said something about it's unnerving or something along those lines, and you think, well, it depends what kind of view. Are you thinking that because you're trying to concentrate on this season, or are you thinking that because Ferrari are such a big, you know, historic team in the sport and it's unnerving being linked with them? But, I mean, to be honest, I think to go to Ferrari with Vettel there is a bit of a daft choice, really, because you don't want to play second fiddle, do you? if you're young, good talent, you know, if you're Bottas, you want to win races and win a championship. Whereas you don't know whether Ferrari are going to let you if Vettel's number one driver, so it's...
Could be second in the championship, though, and you could help win a constructors' championship. I mean, I'd like to see Hülkenberg go to Ferrari personally. But it's interesting, there was a nice interview with Sebastian Vettel on the BBC, I think with Lee McKenzie. Vettel was quite open about his new teammate, because he said, well, there are people I'd want it to be, and there are people who I wouldn't want it to be, but I'm not going to be the one choosing, so. But I'm sure he'll have a little bit of a say. I'd love to know the ones who he wouldn't want to be his teammate.
Yeah, it would be a good list, wouldn't it?
Mark Webber.
Yeah, quite.
Might be one. Didn't he?
Yeah.
I think he was quite strong, and he didn't want Lewis Hamilton at Red Bull when Hamilton was flirting with other teams.
But then, you know, given the luck Sebastian's teammates tend to have, I don't think I'd want to be Sebastian Vettel's teammate. Anyway, let's move on to Red Bull, shall we? Seb's old haunt. Where did that come from? And B, is it something that's going to continue to come from? Oh, your face was a picture then, Kyle.
Yeah. I think it's more the track. I think the, as I just said before, the high downforce and not needing such a powerful engine did help them. And Ricardo obviously likes that track following his win last year, and Kvyat put a good performance in. So, but no, it's good to see Red Bull up the front and stop them whinging for a little bit. But I think they even came out afterwards and still blame Renault for probably for something. So, maybe, yeah, that didn't help.
Maybe they blamed Renault for the fact that Ricciardo seemed to be bouncing off all manner of cars during the... I mean, quite how he still finished third, I'll never know. It was almost like the damage improved the car at one point. It was ridiculous.
Well, I was surprised, to be honest, that he didn't get a penalty for the Rosberg collision. Because, I mean, he just overcooked it, and then Rosberg had the race in line. He should have, really, in my opinion, backed out of it and done it that way. But it is racing. He went for it. You know, credit to him for actually going for a gap and taking a chance. But it was crazy how it all unfolded with Red Bull. And yeah, you know, I think again, because Ricardo had that message on his hat for Bianchi, and I think that obviously made him, he was always watching that, and yeah, I guess that just made a big impact to him for his race.
Yeah, he was certainly one of the ones most, I suppose, affected, certainly visibly anyway, with what happened before the race weekend. I mean, it was interesting that Red Bull switched drivers, didn't they? They switched, they told Kvyat to let Ricciardo through early on. But a great performance from Daniel Kvyat to finish second. I mean, best result from a Russian driver in Formula One, and kept it all together pretty well, really.
I said, even with a penalty as well for the Hamilton overtake. Because, yeah, you know, you think about it, he must have been, what, 7th, 8th at that point to overtake Hamilton? And to end up second, obviously all the problems at the front, but yeah, just keep going, and yeah, continue to work. But like I said, there's a whole, the first four were all Red Bull drivers, weren't they?
Yes.
So, you know, Vettel, it was very Red Bull. So I imagine Mr. Marco was, or Dr. Marco, was very pleased and in the back of the pits.
I'm sure he made those comments public as well, obviously. I'm sure he did. McLaren, and I should probably come to you about with this, Kyle. McLaren, what a weekend.
Double points. How exciting for him.
I mean, is this the start? The return from the weekend from Fernando Alonso wheeling his car back to the pits in qualifying to two high-point scoring finishes. Well, yeah. One high-point scoring finish.
Yeah, 5th and a 9th. Yeah, they sort of kept themselves out of trouble and
finished the race. Let's not underplay that.
Yeah, picked up the points. I read today, it was today, Honda bring a new engine for Belgium. So exciting times ahead.
New engine, Rich.
Yeah, some new engine upgrades, the rest of their tokens, whatever they've got to spend. But yeah, I read that as well today, and you think, well, as long as it stays reliable and you get a bit more power going through, it could be all right.
There's a quote from one of the Honda chiefs, got his name now, said, well, now we've got the reliability sorted. So I thought, just calm down on that.
Oh, clearly. They both finished the race. Not qualifying, but the race. Absolutely. Force India was one of the other places I want to stop off at. You mentioned Perez's crash in free practice, sorry, wasn't it? I have to say, I that may have been a crash where a few people were just a bit nervous with the news of Jules' death, because it didn't seem like too bad a one. Clearly, with the safety that is in these cars, and I know it did flip, which is never a good thing, but it didn't seem... I was expecting worse before I saw it, if that makes sense. I was expecting to watch a worse crash. But clearly, it was bad, because it was a failure of the suspension, or the rear suspension, I think, and they took the cars both out of FP2, didn't they? And then quite to me a much worse incident was Nico Hülkenberg's in the race, where the front wing failed. He could have quite easily gone into the back of, I think, was it a Williams Bottas. In front of him. In the end, went and hit the wall pretty hard. That was nasty.
Yes, if you look at it, it's much more dangerous, because it's quite a slow flip over for the Perez one. But Hülkenberg, once the front wing broke, he could have hit another car, you know, flipped. You know, we saw from Weber and Kovalainen all the years ago, you know, flipping, you know, what can happen there? Yeah. He'd end up anywhere.
And it was at the end of the start finish straight as well, so the fastest part of the track,
yeah, exactly. So that was much more dangerous, but let's say probably the F1 world was a bit nervous at the time.
And I mean, there's still some promise in the Force India car, do we think? I mean, they were okay in qualifying, but I suppose it felt like they'd lost a lot of performance, so they're playing catch-up, and I suppose they're just playing a little less catch-up now than they were.
Yeah, they were 11th and 13th in qualifying. I suppose the Friday non-running didn't help that. But yeah, still a bit of promise. And it still looks quite a cool car. I like the front of it still looks different. So.
With its weird holes. And final word, I suppose, for Toro Rosso, because Max Verstappen finished fourth. Remarkable. But again, it was that kind of weekend where if you just kept yourself out of trouble, you just end up near the front of the field, pretty much.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's crazy how that happens in respect to him, because he kept it going and he got there. And if you think back to Silverstone, the previous race, okay, it was just after the safety car, I think, and he put his foot down a bit too much and just lost it, didn't he? And was it through Maggots and Beckett's, I think, or something? But yeah, he seemed to pick up from that, and he did well. And credit to him, because I did say to Carl before he started as well, I read just after the race that during the summer break he's going to take some driving lessons. So I found that quite funny.
Can never stop improving. But given he's been pretty indifferent the last few races, as I predicted, he did pretty well, I think. Okay, let's have our of the weekends, shall we? Driver. We were just talking about Max Verstappen. He would probably be in amongst it, but Kvyat, maybe?
I'm going to have to go to Vettel for the bit boring, but the perfect performance, really. Yeah, you mentioned Kvyat, Verstappen, Ricciardo even, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'd give it. Go Vettel, yeah. You're going Vettel. I'd definitely go Kvyat.
Yeah, I mean, any of the top four could quite happily. I'm actually going to give it to Alonso, though.
Just, good call. I'll take that as well. Yeah.
I mean, he finished fifth. He did well to get there. And he also tried to push his car back by himself.
That was a monumental effort, yeah. That was. And it was a great overtake on Carlos Sainz, wasn't it, from Alonso. He just seemed to be up for it, which I suppose he would be when he was at the dizzy heights of fifth by the end of it. Goat of the weekend. Go on.
There's only one man, isn't there?
Who's that, Rich?
What's his name again? Is it Pastor Maldonado or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. Why, Rich?
I think something to do with... I think he had three different penalties, which we wrote down earlier, which were speeding in the pit lane, speeding under the safety car, and crashing into Perez.
What's your point? I don't see what your point is.
He's 30, I think, now.
Is he? Yeah. Is he 30 years old?
Yeah. He started...
Wow, that's older than I thought.
Was it 2011 or 2010 he started? I think he was about 25. And, yeah, he's 30 now. And he's older than you'd think. And we were saying earlier, Verstappen should be the one really making those mistakes, being 17, new to the sport, but...
Yeah, but he brings so much money in, you know, it's difficult.
We're trying to work out of all the points he's lost and all the front wings he breaks. Is he actually beneficial than a Julian Palmer?
I mean, if he was breaking even, that would be pretty disastrous, really, because I'm pretty sure there's a big budget that he's bringing.
But even like, I watched the start, like, in the first lap, he ended up across the grass trying to overtake somebody, hitting the fourth corner, and
he'd had a good few weeks though.
He did, yeah, and then he just seemed to forget about that and let himself down.
You were like his new biggest fan.
For a few weeks, yeah, just because he was, I put a few predictions, he was getting points, so
that is all over now. I get the sense. I wasn't particularly a big fan of whoever at the Hungara Ring put up the thank you Bernie message. It's like, oh, thanks Bernie, and Bernie celebrating the Hungarian government's support, in that they've probably paid all the taxpayers' money into posting the Grand Prix and stuff like that. I don't know, I'm guessing, but it sort of seems a little bit unsavoury, really. But, you know, thus is the sport we love.
That's what it kind of annoys me, that we've got like the thank you Bernie, and Bernie says think before you drive. Why is it him saying this? This should be, you know, we should be promoting the drivers and stuff. If they're gonna, you know, if anybody's going to say anything publicly, it should be the drivers, not old Git.
Oof, oh gosh, I hope Bernie doesn't listen to this podcast. I'm sure he doesn't.
I don't know if you caught the F1 forum after on BBC, but there was a bit on there where he was getting into his car to leave the circuit, and I think he went up to Eddie Jordan or something and said thank you for the race or something to him, and I was like, what? It's something along those lines. He didn't do anything.
Benevolent dictator, I think, is probably the best way of summing that up. Okay, team of the weekend. I was going to say Ferrari, because they did have a good effort. Wait, I mean, it was just a bit of a shame with Raikkonen.
Yeah, that was it. Was that's a good shout. I'd also say Red Bull in there, second and third.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, it's probably a better shout.
Yeah, probably Ferrari just ahead of Red Bull. Yeah.
All right, and highlight. Anyone?
I even put a picture of this on Twitter, but my highlight was in qualifying because of the red flag that we had. Several cars. Hamilton did a lap in. It was about 356 seconds slower than pole time.
Oh, I did see that, yeah.
And then the two Lotuses did a lap which was about 10 minutes and something. And it was just like, how's that?
No, the Lotuses really did it. They were two of past her.
I'm really surprised. You're getting stuck in every gravel trap.
Cool. I liked the marshals dancing at the end. They were all dancing as the cars came around. It was a nice little touch. Yeah. Along with the national anthem where they were... there's some guys seem to be playing some strange Hungarian traditional instrument that looked a bit like a piano, but playing it with spoons. So that was quite interesting. And Kimi Raikkonen's camera falling off his car and nobody knowing what it was, except we were all watching the slow motion replay going, "It's your camera, it's your camera." That was good.
That must be a small bit. No, it's a big bit. It's a big bit.
I can see it. It's a really big bit. I'm watching it now. Brilliant. Kyle?
Probably the whole after the safety car restart. To the whole bit. Also, I did quite like Hamilton's sort of "I'm really sorry" message. I thought that's quite. Actually, I did jump up in the air when so the bias coming bit in when Rosberg got the puncture.
Oh,
I did jump up.
Ouch!
Which maybe a bit
puncture. Ouch! Well, fair enough, Kyle. That's allowed, really. Okay, we're going to do this slightly different now. We're going to look ahead to the second half of the season, but also the Belgian Grand Prix, when battle recommences on August the...
21st to the 23rd.
Thank you, Rich. It was almost like you knew that off the top of your head. Let's get stuck in the news first, although this does tend to get out of date by the time the podcast goes up. The only thing I really wanted to discuss was Lotus admitted that they are in talks with Renault about... becoming Renault again. I do think, given Lotus don't pay anything for the team to carry their name, it seems unlikely they will continue to be Lotus for much longer. I think even the original deal was scheduled for up to 2017 anyway. Do you think that's going to happen?
Yeah, there's enough rumours about for it to happen. I suppose it makes sense to buy the old team, they know the area.
Yeah. Been there before.
They know what they're buying. I think it would be good. I think they'd be pleased to get away from Red Bull. It'd be good for them to manufacture in. And they were quite successful, obviously, as Renault, and even with Flavio Briatore in charge. So,
yes.
Doing something quite well.
Yeah, quite. I suppose the thing with Renault is, you know, that nothing's forever, and you know, a couple of years down the line they'll probably pull out and be a bit bored, but yeah, it would be a good thing. If what you don't want is them leaving Formula One, do you? You don't want another manufacturer disappearing, whether it's supplying engines or being actually having their own team.
No, that's it. I mean, they're in with Red Bull at the minute and they're getting so much criticism
in an argument.
Yeah, that's it. It seems just a constant battle between the two of them. And you think it would be nice for them to come in as a, you know, as their own team, because there's not really too many left. So, you know, always good to add. But it'll be interesting as well to see who the other teams turn to for their engines. I mean, would Renault still provide for the rest of the grid, or would they just say, no, our team only, or something?
So indeed. I think there's already been talk about Mercedes supplying Red Bull. That would be an interesting situation. I don't know if that would work, really. Okay, well, it's a question that we do normally ask, but we're in the middle of the... is it a 2-week shutdown and a 4-week break?
Yeah, 2-week shutdown, yeah.
So no one can do anything for 2 weeks of the 4-week break. That said, there is still 2 weeks where they can do something of it. So who is the break? Who is this the most important break for? There you go. That's a new take on an old question. I suppose it's a shout for McLaren, given they've got new engines rocking up.
Yeah, it must be. Yeah, I think them and Renault, really. If they can come back with big improvements for Spa and Monza, big engine tracks. I think it's got to be Honda, really. Honda and Renault.
Yeah, I'd also say for Kimi, because he's had a tough start to the season and he's got a lot to prove second half. And with Monza coming up as well in the not too distant future, which is also big for Ferrari. Do you think he needs to, you know, pull off some result there to stay in the good books with all the fans and keeping the team, keep his drive?
Do you think there could be a driver announcement at Monza? I know this would be looking a bit too far ahead.
I mean, I would say it's probably an important break for the fact that they will be people discussing what happens next year now. I think they will start looking at it. Now they've got a bit of a break, they'll probably be in proper talks. I think for Williams, if they do want to keep hold of Valtteri Bottas, they're going to need to not lose too much ground, as they look like they... Well, it depends, I suppose, on the track, but they don't want to lose any more ground, and they probably still owe Valtteri one for what happened at Silverstone to a degree, so they want to keep hold of him. I don't know if that's going to be possible, but I think those talks are going to be quite interesting.
Yeah, I don't think they've got much choice, really. I think it's either Bottas' decision either way, isn't it? Or Ferrari's decision, probably.
So they'd want that to come across quite soon. They could get Jensen in, maybe, as a replacement. That was speculated, I saw.
I sort of, for the future of British motorsport, I quite like Alex Lynn, who's a development driver there. And
he is.
There's quite a... I saw somebody pointed out, it's Will Buxton, pointed out, they'd done a little video, and they said the future of Williams, and there was a picture of Alex Lynn. So it'd be good to see a young British driver in, along... possibly Palmer as well.
Yes, indeed. You know, if they keep hold of Felipe Massa, then you've still got a bit of experience there, haven't you? So, okay. And in terms of Spa, I love Spa. It's one of my favourite tracks. It's the one Grand Prix that I would really like to go to. Well, alongside Monaco, probably. Having been to the British Grand Prix, I assume we're all big fans.
Yeah, it is my favourite circuit. Has been ever since 1998. Jordan Damon Hill won it. And because I always remember, I was on just trip down memory lane, I was on holiday, we were camping near Cromer, I think, at the time, and my dad I was in the tent, my dad just goes, "Oh, Damon Hill won the race." I was like, "No way." Get home, it's on, you know, VCR, got it on tape, I still got it somewhere as well. So
have you still got the tape and the VCR player?
Yeah, I don't think the VCR works too great now, but still got the tape.
I've still got a video player somewhere, and it works, I think, just about.
Betamax somewhere.
Oh, and Michael Schumacher going over to Lamp. David Coulthard, I think that was at Spa as well. I think so.
Yeah, some classic races. Obviously, last year the controversy, Mercedes,
and 2008 was it with Hamilton Raikkonen?
Yeah, he went over the chicane and right behind him and overtook him into the first corner and disqualified afterwards. And
Mark Webber overtaking Fernando Alonso up Eau Rouge. Oof. One of the greatest overtakes in Formula 1, if you ask me, that one. Yeah, we like that. So great, cannot wait. We should do some predictions, shouldn't we? But before we do that, I will recap the Hungary predictions. It was just the three of us again. I said that Hamilton wouldn't win, which I think was quite a good shout, really, given how well he's done there. I said there'd be two Force Indias in the top eight. No, that Hülkenberg would finish ahead of Perez. I think in the end he retired 12 laps earlier, so I feel a bit hard done by that one. I said Kvyat would finish ahead of Ricciardo, which he did. I said there wouldn't be a Lotus in Q3 or scoring any points. Sadly, Romain Grosjean outdid me on both of those. And I also said Max Verstappen would make a mistake or a crash that would damage his race severely. I think he did make a few mistakes, but given he finished fourth, I don't think I can claim that it affected his race badly. Rich, you said, and you had a good weekend of it, Valtteri Bottas would win the race, which didn't happen. But you said there'd be two Red Bulls in the top 10, two McLarens in the top 15, a safety car. Kvyat would finish ahead of Ricciardo in qualifying. Sadly, you missed out, but that was still a 3 out of 5. Good effort, that. And Kyle, you said Hamilton would be on pole. You said he'd win. You said Red Bull would be in the top 5, which was correct. I gave you a kudos point for that. Williams would have only one car in Q3, which was wrong. I gave you a kudos point for that, though. That was a good shout, or good attempt. And McLaren would be in the points, which they were. And Hülkenberg top 6 in qualifying. Which wasn't even in Q3, sadly. So that was all right. As it leaves the leaderboard, Kyle, you are still leading ahead of Sam Todd. Get more predictions in, Sam. He's still ahead of me, just. Rich, you're back up to fourth. which is where you should be, really, at least. Steve Rust is fifth, with Josh and Ped bringing up the rears. So, Spa predictions, but also any second half of the season predictions that you want to get in, you can add those in too. So, who would like to go first?
I've got some written down so I can chuck some in the ring.
Got it.
Now, first one, I'm going to say Rosberg will be on pole. But for the race, I'm going to say back to normality, Hamilton to win the race, make up for where it kind of went wrong in Hungary. I'm going to say a Williams on the podium, one Force India in the top five, and the last one is going to be Raikkonen to finish ahead of Vettel.
Ooh, QKP for that one.
Because he seems to like Belgium. I looked at last year's results and I think he got fourth. And yeah, obviously I think he's won there in the past and he seems to like the circuit, so hoping.
I like that. Good shout. Any more? Any others?
Maybe just for the rest of the season, I'll say McLaren to be more consistently scoring points. I don't know how much of a prediction that is, but
I like that. No, that's fine. To be more consistently okay, I'll figure it out. Well, put it like this, I would probably predict McLaren will score more points in the second half of the season than in the first.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So we're going to share the same prediction by the sounds of things. Cool, how about you then, Kyle?
For Belgium, I was going to get Rosberg pole, but I'll avoid it.
You can if you want.
Yeah, I'll go Rosberg pole. I'm not going to predict a driver to win. It's quite difficult, really. I think McLaren will have a strong weekend. Their new engine. So I'm going to go for another double points finish for them.
Mm-hmm.
I think Red Bull will struggle. So I'm going to go for both of them not to get in Q3. And finally, difficult one. I'm going to go for Vettel to finish in the top two in the race.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. Like that. Any second half of the season predictions?
I'm going to go for, I think Raikkonen will get another year at Ferrari.
Oh,
good shout.
No, it's not. No, it's not. I can't see that happening. But fair enough.
I'll change your mind.
I was convinced he was going to go. I've changed my mind in the last week and I think he'll stay.
Why?
I don't know, really. It's gone a bit quiet. The Bottas rumour's gone a bit quiet and I just...
That just means they've signed something and no one wants to talk about it.
Possibly.
Fair enough. I'll give you a kudos point for that one.
Would anyone be brave enough to put a shout for Vettel to win the championship?
No.
Because he's only about 50 behind, I think. 50 points or so behind now. In the drivers.
Is he really?
2 points behind Hamilton.
Is that all? Well, stranger things have probably happened. God, could you imagine it? I mean, that would be one of the great...
Yeah.
What an unbelievable effort that would be if Sebastian Vettel ended up being world champion this year. That would be phenomenal. Gosh. But I don't think it's going to happen still. You'd probably get good odds on it as well. Yeah, 42 points. That's only two race wins with two complete no scores.
But then Hamilton wasn't too far off that last season when he won, was he? He was about 30 points or so, wasn't he?
Was he 29 leaving Spa?
29 was it, right there.
Yeah.
But, you know, Vettel's got to finish above two cars, both of which are pretty reliable. You know. But I like it. You know, maybe we will have a three-way title fight. I was actually going to predict for the second half of the season that there will only be one race not won by Mercedes. So that would be my prediction, along with the McLaren prediction. So I'll probably say that. I liked your Kimi Raikkonen prediction. I like that. So I'm going to nick it. I'm going to say he'll qualify in the top four and finish the race on the podium. So there you go. And I think I quite like some of the predictions I made in Hungary, and I'm hoping they're going to actually happen this time, such as Lotus not picking up any points and Force India having two cars in the top eight. I think they're solid predictions. I'm going to try and go for them again. Why not? And I would also add one more, which is that Ricciardo will be back ahead of Kvyat come the final result in Spa. I think that's probably enough. Yeah, job done. Everyone happy? Everyone smiling. Good. Brilliant. All right, then. Well, that just leaves the housekeeping, doesn't it? Don't forget the website, which is nrf1.uk. Lots of blogs there. Hopefully, a few more up over the summer. We'll both have a look at doing some. I might actually write one, but we'll actually do some stuff on the season, on the break.
That might be a late prediction.
Oh, what now?
Yeah, that you will write a blog at some point this year.
Yeah, you're not getting anything for that. if I do, I'll get the kudos point. But we've still got Rich's blog there, all about his dad. It's a brilliant read. Make sure you check that one out. Hopefully come Spa, we'll have some betting tips as well from Kyle. Yes.
Didn't do too bad last time around. Got a couple, two wins out of three.
Are we closing the deficit now then?
A little bit, yeah. We're getting there, yeah. Strong second half of the season, hopefully. Okay. I'm learning.
You get a kudos point for that. I'm bet responsibly, everyone, if you do choose to, but I might put a couple of quid on some of those as well.
Just to give some ideas, sort of outside the box, sort of predictions.
Well worth having a look at those before the Spa weekend. And all sorts of other stuff. Hopefully we'll have a few new contributors as well over the coming months. So that's great. nrf1.uk. There are lots of ways to keep in touch with us as well. There is the email address, nrf1podcast@gmail.com. There's the Twitter handle @thenrf1. There's a Facebook page, facebook.com/NRF1 podcast, I think off the top of my head, which we all contribute to, hopefully. And that must be it. I can't think of anything else, but that's got to be more than enough to keep us busy. So hopefully you occupied as well. And we will be back after Spa, which I'm really looking forward to. I think we all are. So we'll see how that one goes. Until then, enjoy your summer break. What are you guys going to do with it?
Well, when I'm not at work, I've got some time off, so I'm going to chill at home and possibly have a big barbecue and eat lots.
Seems like a good way of dealing with it. How about you, Carl?
Enjoy Norwich's fantastic start to the season, I think.
Get a kudos point for that as well, most definitely. I will be working, but also, of course, similarly enjoying.
I'm also looking forward to the football.
Yes.
So I'll get a kudos point.
Yeah, you're going to, what the hell? Yeah, we'll all have kudos points. I'm going to try and get up to the top of Ben Nevis, having failed to do it in the Three Peaks Challenge. So hopefully there won't be a blizzard this time, and we'll make it on the top there. So that's exciting to a degree. Brilliant. Well, enjoy your summers, everyone, and we will see you, well, it will still be summer, but just a bit later in the summer, after Belgium. Enjoy yourselves, and we'll be back soon. Bye for now.